Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Hey everybody, this is DJ Q for the Golf News Net Radio Network. We now return you to Jay's Place, already in progress. All right, we're back, everybody. Thank you, DJ Q. I am Jay Fleller, and you're listening to Jay's Plays on the Golf News Net Radio Network. Back for the final segment of the show, and we are returning with our last guest, Tom Doak, the world-famous golf course architect, and Rand Morissette, world-renowned expert at golf course architecture and design, and the proprietor of golfclubatlas.com. Welcome back, guys.
Thanks, Jay.
Thanks.
So before we get to the nitty-gritty and the details, we have to take one quick side jaunt. As everybody knows, I'm in charge of doing the football picks for Golf News Net. And so we did very well last week. We went 6-1 with one game left tonight, and we got the Patriots giving a half a point to the Bills. So all they have to do is beat them, and we'll go 7-1. So here's this week's picks. Rand, you're going to be very happy to hear that the team – from your neck of the woods has been treating us very, very well all season. We're going to take the Panthers getting 6 points on the road against the Dallas Cowboys.
No kidding. That's bizarre that they're not favored to beat the Cowboys.
Ah, I apologize. I must not have told you. What we do here is we do teasers, so we are allowed to move the line 6 points. We're going to pair that pick. You got to get them both right. That's the catch if you're going to move the line. We're going to pair that with Packers at home giving 1 point to the Bears. So those two together. Any thoughts on it now?
Well, Carolina should demolish Dallas. They're better across the board at every aspect. And Green Bay seems to have regained form yesterday, and the Bears took a step back at home, so I would say they're the two picks.
Have you been following the Panthers this season? I'd probably bet it would be hard not to with them going 10-0 so far in Mr. Carolina.
Yeah, they're just getting better and better, though. I mean, they're beating up teams at this point. It reminds me of how the Steelers did it in the 80s.
Hey, I have to echo that sentiment. They're firing away on both sides of the ball now. They're definitely hitting their stride all the way across the board. On Thanksgiving, we're going to take the Lions-Eagles under 52 points. I have no faith in Mark Sanchez. And we're going to take the Seahawks and the Steelers over 38 points. Tom, how about you? You're from Michigan.
Well, actually, I grew up as a New York Jets fan in New York back in the Joe Namath era, and so I can see why you're not too happy to place a bet on either Mark Sanchez or the Lions and want to do a points deal instead.
There's more people watching that game,
y'all. By the way, you know, it just hit me. Do you remember the last time you and I talked football, Tom? It was the day before I came out to play Crystal Downs with you, and it was the same weekend. I was in northern Michigan. It was a Sunday, and I made you crack up laughing because while we were on the phone, it was when the Minnesota Vikings had that whole Love Boat cruise thing. You know, remember they got on the boat, they had the sex boat. And we started cracking up because when the Chicago Bears introduced the Vikings onto the field at Soldier Field, they played Won't You Take Me on a Sea Cruise. It took 10 minutes to stop you laughing after that. All right, and one more pick we're going to go with. The Redskins Giants over 40.5, while we go with the Falcons and Vikings under 52. The Redskins and the Giants are going to put up at least 6 touchdowns. They always light up the scoreboard. And the Falcons and the Vikings, you know, the Vikings are playing okay, but the Falcons are fading. And the Vikings' defense is strong enough to keep them low. So those are the six picks for this week. So let's get back into the discussion. Now, we were out on the West Coast near the Monterey Peninsula, and I'm very happy to say that I really enjoyed the newly renovated Poppy Hills, or I guess I should say the newly remodeled Poppy Hills, for two reasons. The first one is the angles were outstanding. Completely new bunkering. Erase everything that you know about Poppy Hills. Charlton and Jones went in there. They put in diagonal hazards. They put in diamond-shaped greens. There's wonderful green surrounds, and they did something even more important. What I think is one of the most important emerging trends I've seen in the last few years, they shaved all the rough. There is no rough on the golf course. The fairways are generously wide. The angles are terrific. The green surrounds let you play any type of shot. This is a completely different Poppy Hills. As Bobby said, no more sloppy poppy. It's fast, it's firm, and it's completely brand new.
What kind of grass is that in the fairways, say?
I'm sorry, Tom, one more time.
I was just asking what kind of grass they planted in the fairways this time.
That's a good question. I can't tell you off the top of my head. But I can tell you that it did play fast and firm, not so much that I had to worry about it rolling all over perdition. But there were really good undulations there. It wasn't so tight that, there was a thick blade that really held the ball with good retention within the fairways. You know, it didn't roll over creation, and it wasn't one of those. It didn't have that bloom to it like they have the experimental greens at, say, 7 on the green course at Bethpage. So it wasn't a pus palm. It was more of a bent or a bladed grass. So I can't exactly tell you right now off the top of my head what it is. But either way, it was astounding because of all of the width. And it was better still because you could go out there, you could play quickly, you could find the ball, but at the same time, your second shots really had to be precise to get close to those pins. And I love this trend. There are other courses are shading rough, like Old Town, for example, where you have all of those wonderful fairways adjacent to each other. Crestwood in upstate New York, where all of a sudden they've got 250 members, recession what recession. Have you noticed this trend emerge, and do you not think that it might be a great way to go in terms of both maintenance and strategy?
Well, don't you think RTJ was influenced at Poppy Hills by his work at Chambers Bay then? I mean, you could have been describing Chambers Bay.
The specific influences, according to both Bobby and Bruce, were number one, Pine Valley, because they wanted to have wall-to-wall fairway with wide playing corridors, but two, Pinehurst, because they didn't want to have it when you got into those woods that you could only chip back out to the fairway because it was a public course, and three, Augusta, because they wanted to bring in the greens sit in the middle of these gargantuan surrounds, much like the greens at Augusta. I thought it was hyperbole. I laughed it off as mere enthusiasm when I heard it, saying, oh, what pitiful stuff. And I was wrong. Okay, they didn't just give lip service to those ideas. They put those ideas in the ground. And those were the three. If there is a comparison to be made to Chambers Bay, I would say that the greens have some excellent contours and cants to them, and that some of the fairways are quite rolling. I can't give it much more than that because Chambers Bay is so much more in terms of undulation, even bigger in scale than Poppy.
Well, you know, I have seen width becoming a trend in golf course design, and you know, I think that trend goes back to the late 80s and early 90s when Bill Corr and I started building golf courses. Pretty much every golf course the two of us have built are very wide, and people have more fun playing because of that, because they're not looking for golf balls all day. And the 2-inch rough at the edge, which is not a big deterrent to really good players, is just a grind for the average golfer, even if they do find the ball. So, you know, I think that trend's been happening for 20 or 25 years. And, you know, naturally, you know, there's nothing new in golf course design. You know, I would, not trying to take credit for that as a concept. Certainly it goes back to Pine Valley, and it goes back to all the golden age courses had 60-yard wide fairways before they had to start paying for them to be irrigated and maintained at a different level. And that's when things narrowed up in the United States about 50 or 60 years ago. But it's kind of why I asked about what kind of grass Poppy Hill has, because some grasses, it's very affordable to do that, and you don't have to spray chemicals on them very much in order to maintain them. And so a big acreage is, you know, if you're going to have to mow it some anyway, mowing it a little more to keep it short is not that big a deal. And then other grasses, it's quite a big deal, and it's harder to do.
Rand, your thoughts.
At the end of a wide fairway, in order for a wide fairway to have any meaning, you have to have a great green. And my experience is that most architects can't build great greens. And so you can have stupidly wide fairways playing to bland greens, and it's just a bomber's paradise. You know, if you're going to have wide fairways, the pressure is really acute and intense to have a great set of greens. And whether the architect delivers that or not, you know, we can judge each and every time.
Well, like you said, that's one of the great things about Chambers Bay. Those enormously wide fairways, but those wonderfully contoured greens. I see now where your question fits in perfectly hand in glove, and that, yes, I do see that at Poppy Hills as well, particularly on hole number 10, where imagine, say, a 90-yard wide playing quarter and dead in the middle of it taking up maybe, say, 30 yards across is the green, and a bunker set at 6 o'clock, not 5 o'clock, not 7 o'clock. You know, and surrounds crowned on the side, you know, and it's visually striking. And from a design standpoint, you know, there's just so many things that that ball can do when it lands. And at the same time, the diversity of the bunkering, you know, you don't have that typical Jones the Father 5 o'clock, 7 o'clock ladder rinse repeat. Now, we also touched on another great course that shaved all its luck, and I'm so happy to see that you guys picked this one for your 18 flavors, and that is Old Town Club in Winston-Salem. So Perry Maxwell's last truly great golf course, and the second to last one that he ever built. Rand, tell us a little bit about it, and then, Tom, you can chime in, too.
Well, it just... It's a really, I played there in 1987, and I got the first confidential guide. My brother gave it to me in 1995, I think, for Christmas. And I went to the Old Town right up, and Tom, I think you gave it a 7. And all I could do was scratch my head. I was 2 grades off from that. I mean, the course that I saw was very narrow. Lots of trees, wall-to-wall green. Yes, they had some great putting surfaces, but, you know, that was it. And then, Jay, as you know, having played it in the last couple of years, you know, the transformation that has occurred over a period of years is startling. And I think that it, given that it opened in 1939, I think it wears the moniker of the last great course built in the golden age of architecture. And if so, you know, that's a great bookend for that period of classic architecture.
Absolutely. I agree with that sentiment. Yes. Tom, your thoughts?
Well, I'm at a disadvantage in this discussion because I've seen Old Town just the one time, and that was 20 years ago. You know, Rand says he was surprised at how high I rated the golf course back then, and I might have given it the benefit of the doubt a little bit, but I'm, you know, when I go and look at a golf course, I'm always trying to look at what's underneath there. What's the strategy of the golf course? You know, how the golf holes hit the land. And while there's been a tremendous amount of progress in the last 20 years in restoring golf courses and some tremendous jobs, not just places like the Cal Club, but all across the country, there are a lot of architects doing good work in that side of the business. And it's impossible to keep up with them all when you're doing a book like this. I saw 99 golf courses this year for the first time. I don't really have time to get back to all the ones I saw 10 and 20 years ago and update things. But it helps a great deal when I saw those the first time, I was really looking at what was there underneath and what the strategies were, because if they've been restored faithfully, those things are just shining a lot better now than they did then.
Yes, usually that's absolutely true. And in the case of Old Town, there's a double benefit. Part one being that by shaving all of the rough down, there were whole new ideas that, maybe they were exactly what was intended by Maxwell. Maybe it's not, but either way, it works so wonderfully. But secondly, the good news is that in a way, I almost envy you, Tom, okay? The sheer fun and enjoyment, the smile that's going to break across your face when you see it, okay? I'm just jealous thinking about how happy it's going to make you to see it. It really was that good. It was one of those days that even somebody well-seasoned and well-traveled, would stop and say, okay, wow, there still are wondrous things that I haven't seen before. It really showed you something that you hadn't seen before, and that's why I loved it so much.
Jay, you're talking about trends. One trend that's running through a bunch of these courses, whether it's Cal Club or Old Town or a place like Friars Head, is you had one guy driving it forward. And he had the presence, and the ability to get people onside and get things done. There's nothing more lame than a golf committee with divergent opinions, and they're just paralyzed into inaction like the Congress of the United States. You need a hero at a golf club. You need one guy who has great taste and knows how to listen to people and get in great talent. And let him drive it forward, and you see that at all of these courses that are immaculately presented.
And that's a perfect segue to something I wanted to. I'm sorry, Tom. Go ahead. You'll second that?
Well, I just wanted to second that and say that it took me a long time. I've just gotten to know better some of the green chairmen that I work with at various clubs where we consult, and it took me a long time to appreciate just how much work those guys do for free. It's really a thankless job a lot of the time. They're answering disturbed phone calls and emails from their fellow members almost every day about, why there's no water in the ball washer on number 12 and, all kinds of things. That it's been rainy for two Saturdays in a row. It just amazes me that people are willing to give that much time to their golf course. Green chairmen sometimes get a bad rap from architects because a lot of the things that we are restoring are things that someone let go at some point over the last 50 years. But there's a lot of guys working really hard to make their golf course better, and hats off to them.
Well, one of those heroes is a guy local to me when I'm upstate. And I bring this up also because they shaved all the rough, and that is Crestwood Golf Club, the little tiny muni that became such a story a couple of years, not because it was such a great restoration, but because it was a great resurrection. Rand, I can think of one thing worse than a Greens committee that seizes up, and that is a tyrant owner who puts in no Greens committee and sinks no money into the maintenance and drives the course into the ground so that it festers. so that by the time the White Knight arrives, what you have is a jungle city overgrown, you know, with weeds that you need a machete to sift through. But Steve Nazowitz bought the golf course from Alfred Park, and day by day, machete slash by machete slash, brought back the lost city that was there. And he has embraced, for long periods of the year, sometimes he puts a little rough in here or there, but he's embraced the theory of absolutely no roughs, those wonderful fairways, twist and turn and have reverse camber, you know, and are wide enough for everybody to be able to hit the ball for the most part, but you still need precise angles into those greens. So I want to invite both you and Tom. I don't know if you're still going to be doing some traveling for Volume 3, which is the Winter Destinations of the Americas, but if you do come by to see Teutica and Yanandasis, I'll have to insist you join me for 18 at Crestwood as well, and we'll get a couple of hot dogs at Bosses. And you're also both invited to come and play with me at Forestgate. We can't wait for you to see the marvelous job that Stephen Kay did there as well, restoring the last Banks course in America. Have either of you had a chance to see those yet?
Which is the last Banks course in America? What's the name?
It's Forestgate in Monroe Township, New Jersey. That's the one that has the 100-yard deep green at the Biarritz at number 17, a 275-yard behemoth from the back tees. Annika had to play it at 225 in a charity match against Brad Faxon, and she beat him 2-1. She made a par on it. You got to see the screen. Okay, it's 100-yard stem to Cern. It's 12 feet across and 8 feet deep in the blitz in the middle of the green. They had to do the core sample to prove that the front was green, and so they brought it back. And it even has the horseshoe in the back section, the little raised sort of U-shape. And when they put the pin back deep in there with the flanking bunkers, it's all that. It's the kitchen sink. It's the bedroom dresser. It's all the furniture. It really is. It's a museum piece of a golf hole and of a golf course. And it also features what I think is the hardest Eden hole I've ever seen anywhere. 200 yards uphill and 20-foot deep bunkers. And, oh, by the way, there's a hogback in the green, too. I never saw an Eden hole like that in my life.
Well, Jay, I actually have some history at Forestgate. It's got to be more than that now. I know it was more than that because my mom was still alive, so that's 25 years ago. I was back on the East Coast visiting home, and I got a call out of the blue from Peter Oosterhout, who I'd never met. And Peter was the club pro at Forestgate at the time. He'd been hired by a new owner to run the place in between playing the regular tour and trying to play the senior tour. And he called me because his ownership group was getting ready to change the golf course. They built 3 new holes that they were going to put houses around, and then they were going to blow up the 5th through 7th holes of the golf course and put more homes there. And he asked.
And 5, 6, and 7, by the way, that's the punch bowl, the no hole, and the reverse for Dan. No.
Correct.
No.
And they had actually already built the 3 holes that were going to replace those 3. And Peter called me and said, could you come talk to these guys about McDonald and Rayner and Banks? Because they don't really know anything about the history of this place at all. So I did make an unscheduled trip to Forestgate to give them a slideshow about the golf holes that they were about to change. And somehow managed to convince them to not change them. I think they still have the extra 3 holes there, so the people that bought homes with a backyard didn't get the backyard taken away from them.
Well, they've built the Palmer course is there now, so back on that piece of property. I'm sure that must be where those are. But from the bottom of my heart, I, every single member of the club along with me, and all of the friends and family of Forestgate say, thank you, Tom. That would have been one of the great architectural crimes.
You can thank Peter Oosterhout. I mean, he really... He'd never spent much time on the East Coast before that, but he's the one who told me about all the other bank courses like Whippoorwill that Rand is so fond of.
Oh, sure.
He, uh, you know, he was getting around to see as much as he could while he was back east, and shared a lot of cool tips with me so I could go see some courses I hadn't seen before.
Well, I'll see Peter next year. It's a big year for me because not only do I have the Masters, you know, where all the golf writers have to go every year for our Masters dinner, and we go for a couple of days. I'll be going to my favorite major championship venue. I'll be returning to Oakmont, and I'll be playing around my beloved Pittsburgh for a couple of days. PGA Championships at Baltusrol, so I'll be the hometown boy. Anybody who wants to come play Thursday morning and Saturday morning are play days for when we're when we are covering the tournament. That's for the PGA. And then, happily, I love going to Hazeltine because it's the easiest thing in the world. I parked my car right outside the door of the media center, and on either Thursday morning or Saturday morning, I get to go play White Bear Yacht Club, one of my absolute favorite golf courses. Talk about a hoot of a golf course. Oh, what magnificent rolling terrain and fabulous cool little holes. There is an unsung hero of the golf course.
I might have told you about that one, too, back 10 or 20 years ago because we consulted there a long time ago.
Randy, I know that you were a fan of it also, weren't you?
No, I've never played golf in Minneapolis or the state of Minnesota, so it's high, super high on the list.
Well, I tell you what, then maybe that
never took the points.
Actually,
I hope you'll get it. So go ahead.
I sent Darius Oliver to White Bear Yacht Club when he was going around America trying to see courses for his Planet Golf book years ago, and that was one of his favorite places. I think he's going to write it as one of the Gourmet's Choice entries for our next volume, for volume 3.
When's the next volume coming out?
Oh, you know, it's easier said than done. I've got most of the main text. I'm editing in Rand's opinions on various things to what I've already got just in the last week. I think that the main text will be done by January, but you know, the hardest part really is putting together some of the lists in the back. You know, it's so hard to remember.
Wait. I don't know. That seems to me like that might be more the fun work. You know, the little sidebars and such.
Well, it's fun on one level, but you don't want to miss something obvious and have all your friends say you're stupid that you didn't put in the great clubhouse or the park club in Buffalo. I mean, there should be a winning on those lists.
Who is going to say, okay, I want to meet the person that would have the C.O. Jones to say to Tom Doak, you're stupid.
I'll introduce you to a few.
And I'll tell you though, Jake, that is the difference between, you know, Golf Club Atlas, we publish something and it's wrong, you can correct it. But, you know, it is interesting being involved with these books. I mean, once it's published, it is set in stone, at least until there's a reprint. And that's a whole different set of pressures.
It's funny you should say that, Rand, because a pal of mine wrote a book that had one of those "what are you so stupid" moments in it. He said one of the 50 greatest holes in golf was 10 at Atlantic City Country Club. And when I interviewed you, Tom, you said that was the biggest mistake you ever made because you completely forgot guys who just blasted down 9 fairway to 10 green. My friend, I think he was vomiting for 3 days after I told him that. So before I let you go, it's time for the trivia question, okay? This is a new thing we started doing, and I think you guys will like this question. Here we go. Then you guys will get 2 chances to get it right because there's 2 of you. So we all know that the Continental Guide started as a Christmas gift. What famous American animated television show also started as a Christmas gift sent back and forth between entertainment industry executives? What famous American animated sitcom was started off like The Confidential Guide, a Christmas gift? The Simpsons is not right, man. How about you, Tom?
Ooh, I wish I knew this. My son is a film student, and he'd know it right away, but I don't.
Throw out a guess, see if you get lucky. Like, well, the right answer is animated sitcom. Well, good try. You're not far off. It was actually South Park. South Park started as a Christmas gift sent between television executives because it was a Christmas little 5-minute episode. So, and it just went viral and it became huge. Darn, it was a good prize this time too. Well, I have to save that one for you for next time. So tell everybody how they can order the book.
Ordering the book is simple. You just go to my company's website, www.renaissancegolf.com. You'll see the cover of the book peeking up at the bottom right of the screen, and you click on that page, and it'll send you right to an order page. We take credit cards, and I've got the Traverse City Girls High School Golf Team, which also won the state championship this year, is my shipping department. They come in every few days and ship out 100 books at a time.
Wow. Can they do chip shots like the girls from San Diego State?
I don't know, but they were, you know, they were a totally unranked team going into the state championship, and they won it.
Well, good. That sounds like a lot of fun. So before I let you guys go, one last thing. I also want to congratulate you for the wonderful write-up that you gave Bulls Day. So glad to see that so many people love that golf course as much as I do. I try to get down there an awful lot, although I think this year I'm going to be headed your way, man. I think we're going to come down. We're going to play Old Town and Tobacco Road, and I have to see Pine Needles sometime in February. But my favorite Bulls Day story was when I was covering the Hootie and the Blowfish when both Dustin Johnson and Webb Simpson were seniors. The bull had gotten loose on the golf course, and of course that was a major part of the story because it was hilarious. So I'm there early in the morning, and I'm, you know, chatting with Webb Simpson and the rest of the Wake Forest guys. And, you know, we were talking about what happened. And so the coach, I can't remember the coach's name, he calls the meeting to order. And Webb, as a joke, puts up his hand, and he goes, "Hey, coach, what do we do if the boat gets loose again?" And without even missing a beat, he looks at Webb and goes, "Use your initiative, Webb. Get your chatty friend next to you to interview him." Anyway, that's what we're going to do one more time before the snow flies, everybody. It's been a fantastic show. Big thank you to our guests, Rand, Tom. It's always a pleasure to have you on. You know, I look very much forward to talking with you guys in the spring, come Masters time, and come time for the third volume.
Thanks, Dick.
Thanks for having us.
So, everybody, we'll catch you next time. DJ Q's going to take you home. I am Jay Flammer. You can check me out at jflammer.com and at thegolfnewsnet.com. You're listening to Jay's Plays on the Golf News Net Radio Network.
That bump music means we're going to have to take a short break. Don't go away. We'll be back at the second half of the show in just a minute.
This is your main man, DJ Q, and you're listening to Jay's Plays on the Golf News Net Radio Network.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.